Okay, meeting has come to order for Governmental Operations and Veterans Affairs, the February 3rd meeting. And Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes from our last meeting on January 2nd. As submitted.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. He moves the minutes of the February 2nd meeting for approval. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and minutes are adopted. Thank you. Okay, members, we have all kinds of papers today. Representative Seifert.
Campaign Finance Board going to take these candy bars away from us. Who is this from? So I don't get in trouble before I start eating.
We'll have Representative Seibert talk about that in a minute. I just have a couple of quick announcements. So, members, you've got lots of papers here in your folder and distributed this morning. If you want to just take a second and pull them together, one I want to highlight before we get started is we have a newer version of the discussion group guidelines that were handed out yesterday. There was a typo in the members listed under the State Governmental Efficiency Discussion Group. For some reason, Representative Neil Peterson ended up in two different groups, which was a typo, and it should be Joe Hoppe. So if you want to just take this.
Can we vote on that, Madam Chair?
No. So that's just for your information. And we have two bills up today. Representative Seibert is first, and I know there's three amendments and two handouts to that, and then our second bill up will be Representative Wilkin. And I think there's fewer pieces of paper on that, but we'll get to that soon. So with that, Representative Seifert, in response to your question a couple minutes ago for the Three Musketeers bars, you know, I understand that in freshman orientation, all the freshmen are told that the first time they have a bill up in committee, they're supposed to bring a treat. So I guess I'll turn it over to Representative Seibert and see what kind of comments he has about that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hoppe.
In respect to being of value, I believe there's just nougat, there are no peanuts, and there's no caramel. Value is debatable.
There are critics. Representative Seibert, you're a member of this committee. Welcome to the testifying stand, and would you like to move your bill?
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to move Bill 455.
Representative Seibert moves that House File 455 be recommended, and it would pass on to the State Government Finance Committee. And we've got three amendments, so we'll take them one at a time. And the first one up is the DE1. Amendment. And Representative Seibert.
Yes, ma'am. This is a delete all amendment, and it better clarifies what our intent was.
Thank you, Representative Seibert. And what we'll do, members, is vote on these individually, but the author would like to have all three amendments put on to put the bill in the shape that he would like, and then he'll go ahead and describe the bill as amended once we get the three of these on. So first one we're going to vote on is the DE1 amendment to the House File 455. Any discussion? All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and amendment is adopted. Representative Seibert.
Yes, ma'am. I'd also move House File 455 A1, the A1 amendment, and that will better clarify and narrow the scope of the bill as to who will benefit from it.
Thank you. Representative Seibert moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and amendment is adopted. Representative Seibert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also move the A2 amendment, and that basically takes this program down from 3 years to 2 years at the request of the Guard.
Thank you. Representative Seibert moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and amendment is adopted. Well, now we have the House File 455 in front of us as amended by the DE1, the A1, and the A2 amendment. Representative Seibert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So go ahead and better explain the Three Musketeers bar. It is freshman tradition to bring something. I did check with Finance and Representative Seifert. As long as your picture's not on it, it's okay. I chose the Three Musketeer Bar for a simple reason. Most people know I did 20 years in the military, and when you're moving around a lot, when you're deployed, the military and your unit's pretty much your family. And everything you go through together. And I like the Three Musketeers because it's all for one and one for all. And all our sons and daughters and friends and neighbors, they're all part of the Guard, and I think that was appropriate.
Thank you, Representative Seibert. Please present your bill as amended.
This bill is pretty straightforward and pretty simple in my eyes. Representative Kahn brought it up about 4 weeks ago and asked the question of the colonel here that why are the education benefits, why do they run out if someone's deployed? And the gist of that was they were not allowed to use them. If they're deployed and they got out after deployment, they never had a chance to use their benefits. What this bill does is allow them 2 years to use those benefits after they get out of the service. That's the simple gist of it. There's a lot more technical things in there on who is authorized to use it and under what circumstances. So with that, I'll open up to any questions.
Okay. Representative Seibert, did you want Colonel Shields to make any comments on the bill here before we have questions? Or?
Madam Chair,
welcome to the committee.
I'd be happy to. Thank you. Colonel Denny Shields, the Assistant for the Adjutant General, Department of Military Affairs. We have received comments from primarily our soldiers, our Army National Guard soldiers who have been deployed for long periods of time. They've indicated to us that during their periods away from home, which in some cases amounts to up to 2 years, they have not been able to utilize the program. Certainly the situation today is a lot different than it was the several years ago when this program was conceived by the Minnesota legislature. It has been an outstanding tool for us in terms of recruiting soldiers and airmen for the National Guard and retaining soldiers and airmen for the National Guard. Our view at the Department of Military Affairs is that this proposed change recognizes the changes in external circumstances that affect us since 9/11. And with that, I would be happy, too, to answer any other questions.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mahoney, can you pull your mic down?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is really the first time I've seen the bill. The premise looks like it's excellent, but I've got just a couple of questions. Is there a cost to this to the Guard, or how much does this generally end up running the Guard in terms of dollar figures in this reimbursement?
Representative Seibert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney. There is a cost, and there is a fiscal note requested for this. I'd like to point out, though.
It's actually not a fiscal committee, so if you could just make sure I get a copy of that.
That's correct.
Great.
And Representative Mahoney is going to take on my finance. Representative Mahoney.
And then on page 3, line, well, you can start at line 20. I was trying to read it. And you're talking about, I'm going to start at line 29. Except for the purposes of paragraph C, clause 1, these terms exclude service performed exclusively for the purpose of, and it goes into the combat training. What does that mean? I mean, I don't get it.
Representative Seibert.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney. What that does is, and that was a change to our original bill, that excludes normal guard duties such as the weekend once a month and the 2 weeks a year. Under the original bill, that counted as a deployment and they would have been authorized this extension. That was not the intent. The intent was for anybody that was deployed overseas or in other stateside locations for federal service for use of this this grant.
Excuse me, Representative Mahoney. It's just been pointed out that one of the handouts in the folder might address this. It says types of active service military personnel. I believe you might find the answer on that page, or at least some.
So,
further question, Representative Mahoney.
So, just your typical deployment for training and stuff is not included in this bill, like you just said.
No,
Representative Pepper. Okay, next on the list is Representative Welty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Seibert, I have one question, and that is just, how did you come to the conclusion of 2 years instead of 3 years in the amendment? And can you think of any extenuating circumstances or any circumstances that might bring this bill back to us in a year or two down the road? And what I'm wondering is, why 2 years? And why not a greater period of time?
Representative Seibert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. President Volpe, I'm going to go ahead and defer to Colonel Shields because it was at their request.
Madam Chair, Representative, 2 years or 24 months is the period of time that coincides with, under federal law, the United States is now under partial mobilization, and under federal law, 24 months is the maximum that a member of the Guard or Selected Reserve can be on consecutive active duty. So it coincides with that. I should point out, though, too, that the bill also doesn't limit itself at 2 years. It's 2 years plus the actual time of federal service. So it's actually two plus years, and in some cases it could be up to 48 months.
Further question, Representative Welty? No? Okay. Others? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Seibert and Colonel Shields. First, I just want to say that, you know, I like this kind of a bill a lot. I mean, it makes me think about my dad going to college on the GI Bill, and, you know, I just think it's a great thing that we should reward people's service with education. I think that's really commendable, and I'm glad we do it, and I think this is a valid extension of that. But as I was reading the bill, I just had a little confusion about what was intended here as far as how this would work. If a person does their federal service, their qualifying service that qualifies them under this bill for the extension, they do that early on, and then they come back, and they're just doing their normal reserve service, do they then, how does this apply to that person? Do they get the extension?
Representative Seibert?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, I believe they would get that because they would qualify for this. So I would imagine your question, if they did this at the beginning of the tour after enlistment and they're back in the States for 3 or 4 years, whatever it was, would they get that extension? Madam Chair, I'd like to refer to Jim Clary.
Yes,
Madam Chair, Representative Seibert and Representative Liebling. Yes, they would get the extension. However, everybody would be subject to the credit hours limit in paragraph G, and that limit is about 4.5 years equivalent. So if they used up their time prior to, they would not have any credit left when they got back. If they went very early into active service and came back and finished in the next 4 years or so with college, they and burned up their eligibility, the extension would have no effect for them. Does that answer your question?
Representative Liebling.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Seibert. Yeah, it does. I guess I'm not exactly sure if was that the intent of the bill. I mean, as I kind of understand the intent, it's to not penalize those people who are on active duty and can't use their credits, that can't use their ability to go to school and so on. So I wonder, and maybe it gets into the cost a little bit issue too, which we're not going to deal with here, I guess. But I mean, there is a cost to this, so I'm just wondering if we're really targeting the people that we intend to, or because it's partly allowing them, partly trying to have them not be penalized for having been on federal service, right? That's a part of the intent here. And then it seems like... effectively, if it applies across the board in that way, we're sort of also giving people a 2-year extension reward, if you will, for having done the federal service. And I mean, that's okay. I just want to know if what the intention was here. Who were you intending to reach?
Representative Seibert.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling. The intent was to reach anybody that was deployed, and I don't think it should matter if it's at the beginning of their tour or at the end of their tour. The intent was to replace those 2 years of that 1 year or those 18 months that person was deployed, give them the opportunity to get what they didn't have. One of the financial aspects of this that I'd like to point out is we are actually, as a state, saving money by deploying these young men and women. Because if they're deployed, they don't get to use their benefits. Right now, those don't get extended, and we are actually saving money in that respect. Now, this footnote's going to point out that how much it's actually going to cost. It's not going to point out the savings. So, with that, I am very comfortable with anybody being deployed under federal service be allowed of this.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Seibert, I just have one question. Last year on higher ed, we had a hearing where a couple of soldiers that were, I think, stationed in Bosnia were over the Internet taking a Minsky class. They were students, happened to be and we had an interactive hearing over at the Armory. And would those students that do participate in these Minsky classes, while they're actually overseas, would they be affected by this legislation?
Representative Seibert.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, yes, they would. Colonel Shields would like to answer that.
Colonel Shields.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, Bosnia, Kosovo, depending on your job, there were opportunities to take advantage of distance learning, and we had a good relationship with Minsky. Those environments arguably are a lot different than Iraq and Afghanistan. While there probably are some of our soldiers and airmen that are in Iraq and Afghanistan that could potentially take advantage of distance learning, I would suggest to you that certainly at this point in time and for the foreseeable future, they are probably in the minority. And I certainly don't want to pretend to know the best way to construct a bill, but there's a certain point in time from the aspect of agency management of the legislature's intent that we have to reasonably simplify the situation. Otherwise, we'd be adding some fairly significant costs to the overhead of managing it. So yeah, we did have some of your constituents too, sir, that were taking advantage of distance learning in Bosnia and Kosovo, but that is not the case with Iraq and Afghanistan.
Further question, Representative McNamara.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Seibert and Colonel, my question is, these ones that are taking the distant learning, they won't lose because they're participating in the distant learning. I mean, that was a terrific program. I wanted to be sure that because they participate in this, they're not going to lose their right for this extension. I just think this is a terrific idea, and I want to be sure that those two ladies that I still see pictured in my mind that were participating in this terrific program are going to be able to also participate in this program.
Representative Seibert.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara. The thing to that, what you're saying is, yes, they can take those courses as well, but they're still subject to that 144 credit limit. So that would compound on that. Speaking from experience, I attempted to take a math class in Honduras while I was deployed. It didn't work out too good. So.
Thank you. Further questions, Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question. On page two, on lines 1 through 6, it talks about federal active service and federally funded active state service. I understand that. This is a great bill, by the way. It makes a lot of sense to me, which sometimes is hard to do. But what about state active service? Is there a time when a guardsman might be put on state active service, maybe in Rosso or for a long time, and where they would need this extension? And it doesn't seem like that would apply.
Representative Seibert.
Madam Chair, Representative Wardlaw.
Colonel Shields.
Madam Chair, Representative Wardlaw, as we reviewed the bill, and I may defer to Mr. Cleary for this too, but as we reviewed the bill, state active service was not included. And when I refer members of the committee to state active service or state active duty, that's when the governor, by executive order, calls the National Guard to active duty. The bill, as we read it, pertains to federal duty, some of which, ironically, is under state of Minnesota control, but it's funded by the federal government.
Representative Wardlaw.
Yeah, I understood. I was just curious if there's ever, because probably most state service would never preclude someone from losing education. I was just wondering if you know of any instances where a soldier could be adversely affected by state active service and wouldn't qualify for exemption and would need it.
Madam Chair, Representative Wardlaw, based on my experience, I'm looking to my colleagues to my left too, the state active duty mobilizations of the greatest duration that I recall is the floods of 1997, when we had some 3,000 of our soldiers and airmen called to state active duty. But even in that situation, where we were dealing with issues all over the state, we were able to manage our assets such that we limited to those active duty tours to approximately 2 weeks. And even though we're certainly challenged right now by our commitments to the federal government, of the 12,800 men and women that are assigned to the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard, today we have approximately 2,000 that are on federal active duty, so we still have a fairly sufficient load in the state.
Further questions? Any members? Okay, Representative Seibert, do you have some closing comments before we vote on your bill as amended?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to thank Colonel Shields and Colonel Brissett and Mr. Palmer for coming out and helping out in their input in this. And I, especially as a freshman, I was having a hard time getting a grasp on everything. I'd especially like to thank Scott Neske and Jim Cleary for keeping me out of trouble. And Jim yesterday said, don't worry, I'm just staff. Well, speaking from experience as a senior NCO, staff is everything. So I just want to thank them publicly.
Thanks. I'd like to ask if there's anybody from the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill. Seeing none, I think we'll proceed with the voting then. So Representative Seibert renews his motion that House File 455, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to State Government Finance. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and bill is passed to State Government Finance. Congratulations, Representative Seibert. Thank you. Next up is Representative Wilkin, House File 46.
Lloyd, good job.
And members, while we're getting situated here, when I announced the discussion groups yesterday, I mentioned that there may be some times here in the next couple of weeks where we don't use our full committee's time. So today may be one of those days. And so there may be an opportunity at the end of committee here after we hear Representative Wilkins' bill to meet with your discussion groups. And yesterday I asked the three groups to each huddle in the corner, and one of the members pointed out that he thought I said hug in the corner. So we'll leave it up to your group, but huddle is a little better, I think. Okay, with that, Representative Seifer, would you like to move this bill?
Madam Chair, I will move that House File 46 be recommended to pass and referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Thank you, Representative Seifert. So with that, Representative, welcome to this committee. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a pretty simple bill. It's just a repealer of a sunset. And while I see Representative Hoppe's on here, so on the committee, so maybe I ought to explain it a little bit.
Huh?
No. But this is actually the fifth annual litigation bill. This concept has gone through every 5 years, not because it didn't pass, but because it did pass and it had a sunset on it. And I keep trying to remove the sunset, and we're going to go through a negotiation with the Attorney General's office. Mr. Peterson and I have become quite close in our discussions here. But what the bill does, the reason why it originally came about.
Excuse me, Representative Wilk, we're having trouble hearing you. Can you pull the mic a little closer?
Sure. Is that on? Yeah. Okay. The reason why the bill originally came about was because of litigation that the state was engaging in originally with the tobacco settlement. As you might recall, the $200 million of the tobacco settlement was taken and put into a separate fund, separate from the legislature and out of the legislature's authority, since it's a court settlement. And MPAT, Minnesota Partnership for Action Against Tobacco, is the group that oversees this. Many of us in the legislature felt that this was an abuse, and what should have happened was it should have gone into the general fund, and basically the legislature should have prerogative to allocate any money and go through the normal appropriation process. And if we deem that to be the preferred route for how the money should be spent, we'll appropriate it accordingly. There is also some other cases which are a little more obscure, but where basically the Attorney General or one of the regulatory authorities could negotiate a settlement with somebody, and the taxpayers wouldn't have the direct benefit. Basically, you and I are the elected representatives of the people who are constitutionally given the authority to appropriate money. And this preserves legislative prerogative to do that. Through the conference committee process, a sunset was put on this. We did move it out 1 year. 1 year we moved it out, a couple years, I think. Now I'm proposing that we remove it. I have heard of absolutely no problems that have cropped up due to this legislation, this statute that's in place, and I'd like to make it permanent at this time. I'm open to questions.
Questions for Representative Welkin, and then soon we'll be bringing up Mr. Peterson. Representative Mahoney.
She's pretty specific. You got to get this mic right in front of you, otherwise she'll call us on it. You know. Remember, you were nice to her this morning. I'm going to try and be nice to her today. I don't have a bill up.
I was
though.
Nice to you too, Representative Mahoney.
That's true. I appreciate
touché,
that.
Touché.
But be that as it may, as my mother would say. You said that the primary reason this bill came forth was the tobacco settlement and the way that it was broken out. Other than the tobacco settlement money, which certainly we all realize is a huge dollar figure and truly saved saved the state a year ago because that was all taken and put into the budget. What's the dollar figure that this kind of behavior has affected other than that tobacco? I mean, is there are we talking $100,000 or another $100 million beyond that tobacco settlement? Do you have a figure on that?
Representative Wilkin.
I'm sure Representative Mahoney. I don't, because it could vary every year with whatever litigation is going on. I'm not sure what settlements may have occurred in the last year or two. But they would have gone into the general fund rather than what was happening was if the one of the regulatory authorities, be it the Attorney General or one of, you know, say Commerce, if they're negotiating a settlement, they could either plow it back into their agency or they could say, you know, give it to the Little Sisters of the Poor. Might be a great idea, a very worthy cause, but the bottom line is if we're representing the taxpayers of Minnesota, the taxpayers of Minnesota should benefit, and their elected representative should have the authority to put that through the regular appropriations process. And I'm very willing and to work with the Attorney General's office or whoever if we want to adopt language that says they can recommend a use, and the legislature can, you know, just like the governor would recommend a budget. The Attorney General or the Commissioner of Commerce can recommend a use for the money, and then the legislature can go by that or come up with their own idea.
Follow up, Representative Mahoney.
Yeah. So you don't have, other than that one incident with the tobacco money, can you give the committee some examples? Other than that one, you know, whether it's the Commerce Commission or the Department of Commerce or Department of Deed or whatever, where this comes into play, because if we're going to continue to pass a bill every year or every 2 years over one particular issue, you know, our memories have got to get shorter.
Right.
Representative Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney, there's other ones, and they're just more obscure, so the members wouldn't be as familiar with them. I use the tobacco settlement because I think pretty much everybody is familiar with that one. There is a particular one with the U.S. Bank where the money went to Habitat for Humanity, I believe. And then there was another one where there was a donation. It had to do with milk, and there was an in-kind donation of milk to schools or something. I can get the specifics of it, but basically we saw a few of these. We decided to basically say, no, we're going to put this should go into the general fund. So basically there are no more examples since this went into effect in 2001.
And Representative Mahoney, I believe that our next testifier, Mr. Peterson, will have some details on each of these items. So further questions, Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Wilkins. So does, other than the tobacco settlement, you've got a list of some of the more obscure ones, but how about if I phrase it this way? Were any of these settlements, whether it went dealt with the U.S. Bank and Habitat for Humanity or, you know, some milk company and milk in schools, did any department or the Attorney General or any settlement that the lawsuit that the state took part in the settlement, was there some egregious thing like, I'm just pulling this out of the air, like the Department of Commerce decided to toss money into an ag program for, you know, environmental purposes. I mean, is there something that so far out of whack that, you know, we should take note of it, or is it are these departments making settlements that come underneath the preview of why the lawsuit was made and in the preview of the department?
Representative Wilkin.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, I guess the thing that you're probably trying to figure out what got my attention on this thing. $200 million got my attention. Basically, $200 million of taxpayer money going to an outside organization, and the legislature has absolutely no authority over that organization to rein it in or to, maybe put that money to a more focused purpose. At the time, that organization was using it for lobbying efforts and kind of rubbed people the wrong way. Now, Mr. Peterson has suggested that maybe there's a dollar threshold. I think he might have talked to Representative Kahn about something, but an idea about maybe putting some kind of dollar threshold. This bill has another stop when it goes to Representative Seifert's committee. I'm open to tweaking the statutory language and making it permanent, but making it somehow more workable for if the Attorney General needs some latitude.
Just one last follow-up.
They have several people on the list. So, Representative Mahoney.
That $200 million, that was the tobacco settlement money that was used by Target Market or whatever the heck they were called. Or what was the $200 million from?
Representative Wilkin.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, that went to MPAT. It's $202 or $204 million, to be precise, but went to MPAT for their programs.
And those programs are what?
Cessation and...
So it's all tobacco. Thank you.
Next on the list is Representative Aaron Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Representative Polkin. I'm not aware of any other state that prohibits these types of settlements with groups or organizations. And just to find out where you're thinking a little bit, another example. So I believe some St. Paul police got shot and killed in 1995, 96. And then a group out of Florida called the American Federation of Police starts calling into St. Paul and wants to raise money to provide counseling and assistance for those people who have been affected by the loss of a law enforcement agent. Okay, so that's a lie, and they're just putting the money in their own pocket. So the state goes after this group, gets $100,000 out of them, $50,000 goes to the state, and $50,000 goes to the St. Paul Foundation for the use of grief counseling and such. So that, in my opinion, follows the intent of the donation or the fraud that was taken place by this group out of Florida. Does that philosophically meet any test that you might have? Is that an appropriate use of $50,000, that it follows the donor's intent? And if not, then the 500 or so year history with this type of settlement is only not applied in Minnesota. So I just wonder why Minnesota would have this restriction if no other states do.
Representative Wilk, I'm going to ask Mr. Peterson to come up to testify and stand too, because I see these scenarios. Like to hear from the AG's office on this too. But with that, Representative Wilk, if you'd like to respond.
Sure, absolutely. Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, the current statutory language addresses that. Basically, it says if you're recovering money on behalf of a specific group, they could give it back to the donors. And if the St. Paul Foundation wanted to set up a fund, they thought that was a good idea, they could conceivably easily send a check back to the donors and say, but we have established this fund at the St. Paul Foundation, and you can get that accomplished and make sure that, exactly as you said, the intent of the original donation was followed through on.
No follow-up.
Thank you. And I'd like to welcome Mr. Peterson to the committee, and if you'd like to identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Ken Peterson. I'm Deputy Attorney General.
So did you have a response to Representative Aaron Peterson's scenario there?
That was the case, and I talked to Representative Peterson about this. With the idea behind a lot of these things is try to respect the wishes of the donors. In that case, this Florida group had gotten a lot of money out of Minnesotans and then just kept the money. But the people who had given the money had done it with the idea that it would go to help to provide assistance to grieving families of, various assistance to them, grieving families of slain police officers. So what the idea was, well, let's honor their wishes. And this was before I came to the Attorney General's office, so I can't say that I was intimately involved. That was the central idea. So $50,000 of the money went to the St. Paul Foundation, provided grief counseling, and $50,000 went into the state's general fund. Those type of concepts are impossible under this restriction right now. That's why I was happy to hear that Representative Wilkins was willing to discuss any other ways of getting around this for the future. Although we have not come to any kind of agreement or anything, but he is willing to discuss it.
We'll follow.
Mr. Peterson, so I have a question for you then. So if there's not any real discernible group that's out there that would receive the funds, how do you decide what's currently done in that situation?
It is a problem, Madam Chair, that you don't know, sometimes you don't know who to give the money to. You'd like to give the money back to the people who were somehow wronged, but at times you can't give the money back to them, or administratively it's too difficult to do so. That was the case with, we talked more about that with the U.S. Bank case. So you try to find a group that somehow is close to what that group, what the initial group did, that they provide that type of services. We had one, or the Attorney General's office had one regarding called the Wishing Well Foundation. There was a fraudulent group cooked up basically to take advantage of the good feelings that people have about the Make-A-Wish Foundation. They're calling people and saying, we're trying to help out terminally ill kids. Well, the money was terminating in their pockets, was not going to help out terminally ill kids. So we did sue them. They gave a sum, I think it was $100,000, that went to, or maybe it was less, I'm not sure, that went to basically to Make-A-Wish Foundation to help terminally ill children. It was just, it would have been harder to get that money, or administratively more difficult to send $25 back or $20 back to the various donors. And so those are one of the most egregious types of problems that this legislation causes.
Okay. We have further questions. Next is Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman and Mr. Peterson, I thought, wasn't there some other issue about the tobacco settlement that came after the Minnesota tobacco settlement, so it was a different, and that there was there something about how we couldn't participate in that? Could you go into that a little bit?
Representative Kahn, Madam Chair. There are actually four different types of problems. One of the problems we just talked about is honoring the wishes of donors. Another problem is what Representative Kahn just alludes to. That is, in a multi-state litigation, where other states are...
Excuse me, Mr. Peterson. You pull the mic a little closer, please. Please continue.
When we have we're engaged with other states in litigation. We did have to forego participating in a settlement recently with one of the tobacco companies, a smaller tobacco company, that did not participate in the 1998 settlement with Minnesota and the other states that did those around the same time. We had to forego participation because some of the other states insisted that some of the money go to a foundation. And so we just had to say we're out of the game. We can't be involved with that. So there are those type of circumstances when, because you're involved with other states, they don't have these same type of restrictions, you have to say, we can't be involved with it. And I want to make it clear, I can't say that this happens a lot. For the most part, I want to make this very clear, we do not want to funnel money to nonprofits or to other people that take money away from the general fund. We don't want to do that. There are cases, though, when it just makes sense to do so. A couple of the other examples are with the U.S. Bank case. That was one that Representative Wilkin discussed. We brought suit in 2000, I believe it was, or maybe 2000, 2000 against U.S. Bank for selling records of their customers to various telemarketers. And we brought suit against them, and the problem was they had about 1 million customers were affected, and they were living in roughly around 20 different states. So we brought this to them. It was a practice at the time, though, that was common among other banks. Not U.S. Bank was not the only one doing it. It was one of the bigger ones, one of the biggest beneficiaries of it, but it was not the only one. They did not feel they did anything wrong. They wanted the lawsuit to go away, though. So what they said to us, and this was their request, that they would give $500,000 to the general fund, and $1.5 million to Habitat for Humanity. If the bank had a relationship with Habitat for Humanity, we did not suggest Habitat for Humanity. Mike Hatcher, on the Inbury office, that ain't a relationship with them at all. And they wanted to go to Habitat for Humanity. He agreed, and so they settled it. This made the case easier. We did not have to go to trial, did not have to go through all that stuff. It made it easier for the defendant. They were able to make the thing go away and move on. And Habitat for Humanity was able to take the benefit from it. Also, the money went to people in Minnesota, did not go to people in the other states, the 19 other states where they had had customers who were affected by this. A final way that it affects us, this is a real small way, that when the state, or affects the state, not the Attorney General's office, but state agencies, when you have someone provides a service to them, and for one reason or another, they don't provide the adequate service, or there's some problems with it. We go after them to collect money from them. The problem can be that whoever you go after doesn't have the funds to pay it back. We had one a few years ago when I first started. It's a small organization providing training to police officers. They did not have the funds to provide the billing errors. So they did not have the funds to pay back the money. So what they did, in lieu of paying back the money, they provided training at the same cost, which they could do. And so that was a case where it just made sense that the state was whole, you've got its product, and the organization was not put out of business. So those are the type of examples. But I do want to say it doesn't happen that often. It probably comes up once, twice a year where these things do occur. And I don't have one thing. I think someone asked, do we have an idea how much money has been lost in this? We don't. We could say that in various situations we've lost money. There's one final example. I know we're up to local government stuff today, but one final example, one we just had to forego recently. We're involved in a case against a drug company right now. They offered, as part of the settlement, that they would give a bunch of drugs to the state in lieu of payment. We had to say we can't do that. We need cash because it would have to go to because of this law. And who knows what the price of drugs are? I mean, that's a whole other story. We can talk about that. But they did offer, make an offer. We just said we can't even consider it.
So you're saying we can't solve the state's budget deficit with drugs?
It has to be the right one.
Yeah, that's have cocaine or meth or something.
Representative Wilkin.
Madam Chair, I just want to point members to some of the statutory language that's in here. We did anticipate some of these issues, and we did build in some language into the statute to accommodate them. And if you look at Subdivision 2, the exceptions, the first part of that paragraph talks about when you're suing on behalf of specific injured persons, that the this does not prohibit. Yeah, it's on the back of the summary from the House Research. It does not prohibit the settlement from going back to those injured persons. So in the case of the police officer training organization, it would be perfectly acceptable to provide training to those injured persons that you're suing on behalf of. The second part of the paragraph basically accommodates the U.S. bank type situation where the cost of identifying and returning the money to the aggrieved individuals is prohibitive, and they're hard to locate and such. And in that case, it would go in right into the general fund. It gives some latitude there, so that we do understand that every situation presents some unique challenges, but I think we accommodate most eventualities that would come up.
I've got a list here. Representative Liebling is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, you've been talking some about how this having this statute might put a damper on settlements, but I'm wondering, does it also put a bit of a damper on lawsuits being initiated if people know that the distribution of the funds is somewhat out of their hands, that they might not want to come forward as a victim or something like that? And I want have a follow-up to that as well.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling. I appreciate the question. I don't think we can quantify it, though. I don't know if I can say yes or no to the question. I still don't know. It may or may not. I don't.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Liebling.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. The other thing I wanted to ask is, when you have these, you enter into these settlements are approved by the court. Isn't that correct? So we have both your agency, where your boss is an elected official, too, and then we've got a court review here, so there is some kind of public oversight to all of this. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, as an attorney, you understand that's true. That is the case. We have to take this before a judge. And then sometimes we believe that a judge may not, though we haven't had the experience, that the judge would prefer to have this type of thing happen with the Melt case, because that is what happened. This was a case brought against, I'm not sure, I think it was against it was a national multi-state case. With a judge, it was not a Melt case, it was a multivitamin case that I'm thinking of. It's a multi-state case we brought against a number of vitamin manufacturers for price fixing. What happened in that case is big buyers of the vitamins got direct damages. They got their money back. Feedlots, big retailers, they got money for it. The judge, though, ordered, because didn't know what to do with just regular people like you and me that may have bought those vitamins, realized he couldn't get the money back to them. What the judge did in that case, on his own motion, he ordered the money to be divided among the various states and then used for nutritional purposes. And so Minnesota got $5 million in that case, and what we did, the money was given to food shelves, emergency food programs, Meals on Wheels, that sort of thing. And so that was a case where the judge actually brought up the idea and then said, this is the way I want to do it. And each state was allowed to determine how it would dispose of the funds, as long as it went for nutritional purposes. So the judges aren't always a setup for these things either. The judge will be a check on it.
Thank you.
Next on the list is Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wilkins, and maybe my question is for Mr. Peterson. You caught my attention when you said the U.S. Bank came forward and said, well, we'll give $500,000 to the general fund, and we'll pay $1.5 million to Habitat for Humanity. And my first thought was, oh, they're good guys. They're giving $1.5 million to Habitat for Humanity, and all of a sudden we've lost the fact that they were selling mailing lists for their customers for other businesses to misuse or to use in ways I don't know that their customers originally intended. wouldn't it be more fair for them to pay the $2 million fine if that's really what they're doing? And if the legislature thought it was right, aren't we free to give $1.5 million to Habitat for Humanity? We may not think that's for somebody mis-selling a mailing list. That might not be connected to what that use was. I think it's pretty handy that the person admitting the fault was able to pick where they would get to make what I could look at as $1.5 million donation. I would think it's a responsibility of the legislature to get involved here, Representative Wilkins. And is, would your bill, what would have happened? Would they have been able to be conceived to be this good guy of giving $1.5 million to Habitat for Humanity?
Representative Wilkins.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, no, they wouldn't have, and they wouldn't have had a charitable tax deduction, and they wouldn't have got the PR value of giving it to a charity.
Okay, next on the list is our
Madam Chair.
Oh, excuse me. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Representative McNamara. That goes in the settlement, though. I agree with everything you're saying. You know, they got tax deduction. They got some arguably goodwill. At the same time, we got to settle the case. So we did not have to go to trial. That's the way settlements work. You know, people say, well, you did this, you did that, and you just come to some sort of agreement. We would have preferred to get more money. We would have preferred the money go to the general fund. But that's the nature of settlements of lawsuits.
Follow up, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that you would prefer it to go to the general fund. And if we didn't allow them to give it to Habitat for Humanity, it would have went to the general fund, and then we could have looked at and listened to a proposal from Habitat for Humanity to proceed with that money there.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Peterson?
I don't think so. I don't know. We've gone to trial. Who knows how much we would have gotten, what the results would have been. We don't know if we would have won or lost or what would have happened. We don't know. And the practice could have kept going on. And it could have kept going on for 3 or 4 years. You know, it takes a long time to get a major case of debt to court. So we're able to finish the thing, get it done within a month or two, or I don't know how long, maybe 6, I don't know. But a few months, and get it, just move on, everybody's able to move on and take care of it. Otherwise, it would have dragged on a long time, and maybe it would have kept selling that material at the same time. That's the nature of selling a lawsuit.
To this point, Representative Kahn.
Well, I think Mr. Peterson made the point. The problem is the more options you have, the easier it is to settle, and litigation is the most wasteful. Don't you guys believe that all the time? You're throwing in bills all the time to stop litigation. You dump on the trial lawyers. This is so. This is one of the. This is one of the ways that, you know, this is by having an option, you can maximize the money going to other stuff than litigation. But I think Mr. Peterson answered. So.
Next on the list is Representative Ruth Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn has made the point that I was interested in. Thank you, Representative Kahn.
Yeah. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Wilkins. It seems to me there's some, though, balance here in that, particularly I'm thinking in the consumer protection area, where the general public has been aggrieved. I mean, they have been ripped off in one way or another, whether it's through inappropriate corporate actions or in an unethical sort of behavior on behalf of someone or another. And to have the remedy for that related to making those people whole or at least solving those same issues, to me, has some value in terms of just the citizens feeling like we as a state are looking out for them. And when they are abused, that we are going to try to make it more in some way that's sort of related to the problem. And so that if we have drug companies that are inappropriately charging our citizens who need that drug therapy to retain their health, to have that money dedicated to a health purpose, which could be, you know, funding our senior drug prescription drug program or something, has some real balance. And my fear is that if it just goes to the general fund, it doesn't have that same sort of sense by the people who are ripped off that somehow the world has been made whole in the right way. And it also doesn't, it loses, I think, some real flexibility in targeting the solution to the problem to the people who most need or could benefit from that. And I just don't think if it goes into the general fund, it will ever reemerge in that same way. And so I do think that they're actually, in addition to saving the litigation costs, there is some some purpose just in giving the Attorney General's office the flexibility to relate the settlement to the issue that was the basis for the court case.
Representative Wilkin.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler. Yeah, I think that if there's people who are involved in this that were directly aggrieved, the statutory language that's in place contemplates that, and they can be directly compensated for their for however they were aggrieved. If that can't be done, then it goes in the general fund. And I have confidence in the people sitting at the table here that we can make the decision to make sure those dollars are spent properly. Firstly, my guess is that the current Attorney General would not have made the same settlement that would have created MPAT, and they've kind of intimated that before, that you know, that kind of dollar amount they think should be have some legislative oversight. We are the ones that are charged with appropriating money, not the executive branch and not the judicial branch. It's our job, and this maintains the prerogative of the legislature, no matter what the particulars of any given case are.
Mr. Peterson.
Just, Madam Chairman, just to make sure that to emphasize, the Attorney General said a number of times if he had been handling the tobacco case at that time, he was not the Attorney General at the time, he would have brought it to the a settlement of this magnitude, he would have brought it to the legislature. And as you know, he's been critical of MPAT at various times, not necessarily for the way they got the money, but the way they've handled the money since then.
And we agree on that.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, just to say, I understand how if a specific individual is aggrieved, that this does not take anything away from them. But I'm thinking in many instances, you're going to have seniors who, by the time the litigation gets to this point, have passed on. I mean, that it's difficult to get, or it's just not cost effective. And that's where I'm saying I think there's some balance in this. I do like the idea of having maybe some, you know, for the large settlements, you know, that apparently is the motivation for your concern here, you know, maybe there could be some dollar settlement limits. But I just think for the ones that we're doing good consumer protection work to relate the remedy to the problem that brought it about, I think has a good balance in my mind.
Representative Wilkin.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, that's why Mr. Peterson and I talked out in the hallway about this other idea, and we'll try to come up with some wording, and if between now and when we get to state government finance, we can find some agreement. There'd be peace in the valley, that's great. If not, we'll have to go our separate ways, but we'll sure make the effort.
Thank you. Next on the list is Representative Kahn.
Well, that essentially was my is that do you have the language here today? Do you want the bill to be done here, or do you want it to go on its way to state government finance?
Representative Wilkin.
My preference is just keep moving it on, and we'll talk. I know you're.
I was kind of asking the chair, not you.
Oh.
I like to keep things moving in this committee. So.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, it's just, you know, I've been listening to the arguments, and I really didn't have a dog in this fight, I guess, coming in, and as I've been thinking about it, it does occur to me that it does make sense that that's our responsibility to decide where these funds should go. Even in terms of deciding, you know, if we're going to have a settlement, to have any office, and we'll just, the Attorney General's office in this case, I'm not picking on them specifically, but to have any department making that determination in somebody's office, for whatever reasons they make it, just doesn't make sense to me. It makes sense to me that that's our responsibility as a legislature to take those monies, and if those monies should go to a certain place, it seems to me there are things built into this bill to handle those specific instances, Madam Chair. But if there is some ambiguity, so we'd say, as to where the money should go, it seems to me it should be something that should be discussed in this legislature, in our committees, in front of everybody that wants to listen and make those determinations. Let somebody come and make the case that that's where it should go. And so I'm going to support your bill here, Representative Wilkin, because I think it makes sense for what our responsibility is. Even though I got to admit that the expediency would be nice, but, you know, government always doesn't have to work for the expediency, and the end doesn't always justify the means. That was more of a comment than a question.
Thank you. Any further questions from members? Representative Liebling.
Yeah, just briefly, Madam Chair.
And yes, I guess that responding a bit to Representative Demmer's comment, I guess that, you know, would be perhaps what we need is something that says there should be a preference. If there's just loose money generated by litigation, that there should be a preference that it goes to the general fund. But what really concerns me, and I am an attorney, and so I have some sense of this, is that, you know, when you take out the flexibility on the back end, it really impacts it on the front end in terms, and I think that Mr. Peterson's been talking about this a bit. And so, you know, we may be really shooting ourselves in the foot in terms of being able to obtain money from these lawsuits and move things along and not tie them up and get some benefits for victims and so on, just because you're taking tools out of the toolbox for the lawyers who are going to try these suits. And, you know, that's a big thing to do, and I don't think we should do it lightly, even though, sure, you know, we'd like to be able to have the money and be able to make the decision where it goes. You know, maybe some language that would be the preferred outcome, so that if there is, you know, but I just am really reluctant to tie the hands of the attorneys going in who need to have that flexibility to do the best job for the state of Minnesota. So I would urge members to vote against this in its present form.
I don't see any further member comments. I'd like to open up to the audience if there's anybody in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill. Trying to get some recruits there, huh?
Any help I can get, always.
Representative Wilkin, would you like to make a couple final comments here before we vote on your bill? Representative Wilkin.
The only thing I'd say, Madam Chair and members, this has been in place since 2001. It appears to be working. There hasn't been any great problems. As a matter of fact, no specific problems have come up. I think that's because we were very careful in the way we worded this. We put exceptions in. We talked to a lot of different people. We talked to different departments throughout government and built in some different exemptions to this. So there is latitude there. The preference should always be when we're suing on behalf of the taxpayer that the taxpayers benefit, and that should be allocated through the general fund through our constitutional responsibility to do that in the legislature, and I'd appreciate your support.
I do have one further question from member Representative McMurr.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wilkins, I got a little confused. So the tobacco settlement, well, first, what year was the tobacco settlement in?
98.
Representative Beckmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and either Mr. Peterson or Representative Wilkins. So all these ones, I guess I'm getting a lot older than I thought, a lot quicker. So all of the tobacco, the Blue Cross, the Habitat for Humanity were all prior to 2001?
No. Mr. Peterson.
Yes.
Okay, and then this
legislation. McMurr.
Thank you, ma'am. Excuse me. Thank you. So this legislation only got passed in 2001, and it had this sunset in it.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. I think we're getting ready to vote here. Oh, Khan, sorry. Representative Khan.
Well, Madam Chairman, I hope we can fix this bill up, but in present form, I'm just going to vote no on it. I just don't. I think that it creates more problems than it solves, and I do think there is a form that it can work in, but I don't see it in this one, and if we're not going to fix it up here, I'll wait to vote yes on it when it's fixed up.
Okay. I don't see any further questions. I think we're ready to vote here. Members, I know there are a couple of our members who are out right now, and they asked to be found before we take a vote on this. So I'm going to call a recess until 10:35.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Khan.
You know, if nobody's calling for a roll call vote on it, why can't we just vote? I'm not calling for a roll call vote on it. So, and Madam Chairman, if it comes out the way they didn't want it to come out, I'm sure you have the ability to bring it back and deal with it. So.
Thank you. I appreciate the advice to new chair here. Thanks.
We'll fix it up in state government.
Okay. Representative Seifert renews his motion that House File 46 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to state government finance. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and bill is passed. Thank you, members. We have a few minutes here if you want to huddle in your three discussion groups. We have a couple bills that will be up next week. And with that, members, meeting is adjourned.